How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Preservation Chicago has released its annual list of what it says are the 7 most endangered buildings or structures in Chicago. It includes one of the earliest office towers to go up after the Great Chicago Fire, the oldest African-American Baptist church in the city, a home designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, and even a bridge. To walk us through this year's list, we invited Adam Natenshon into the studio. He's the Director of Operations and Communications at Preservation Chicago. Also with us was Jonathan Solomon, Professor of Architecture at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and partner in the firm Preservation Futures. The conversation started with them talking about the emotions that come up every time they see this list.
It's a huge undertaking, actually, to pull the list together every year. And it's always a sense of relief when it goes public. Mm-hmm. And I will say, though, that it's incredibly rewarding and satisfying to be able to really push the information out and share the information. There's some really incredible buildings on this list, and really every year. I mean, the list every year has surprises. The way that the list is selected is through a vote. It's nominations through the public, social media, newsletter, comes from our board, which is, represents all sort of corners of the city, our staff, which is active throughout the city. And we have up to between 80 and 100 candidates for these 7 slots.
Yeah.
And then there's a long process and a long vote, which is actually a true vote, a blind vote. And then when we find out,
here's our seven.
Let's get working.
What about you, Jonathan? When you take a look at this every year?
Hope, I think, is an initial emotional response. It's wonderful to see preservation coming into the public eye through the work of Preservation Chicago in putting this list together and through engagement with the public in it.
Why does that bring you hope? Tell me more.
Because I truly believe that preservation is adds value to the community. It adds cultural value. It enriches our lives, the preservation of historic structures, but it also adds monetary value, and it should be a tool for development. And I think too often we talk about preservation in opposition with development, and the arrival of this list is always a chance, I feel, to attempt to reset that conversation. And my other two emotions were curiosity and determination. Right?
Curiosity, and determination.
There's always something on the list that I don't know, and so it's always a chance to learn something a little new.
Yeah.
And there's always an opportunity there, I think, with appropriate determination to make something valuable work out for the community. And I think that's present in this list for sure.
Yeah. Why do you think preservation's important, Adam?
Well, it's a great question. So I think we've seen from really countless examples that historic preservation is a really effective way of catalyzing positive change. We talk about our role at Preservation Chicago of leveraging the power of historic preservation to create healthy, vibrant, sustainable, diverse communities. And historic preservation is essentially an asset. And these buildings that we're looking at are essentially overlooked, neglected assets, but they're waiting to be revitalized. And if we can bring together the necessary resources for the stakeholders, the commitment, the resource, all the parts and pieces that are required to bring these buildings back to life, back to vibrancy, they can become a really vibrant cornerstone and anchor of right. their communities.
So we've got each of the buildings here. I'm looking at the most, the article, of course, of your full list. Now, and for each one, you sort of describe what the building is and why, you go into why they're endangered. So let's talk about the Delaware building, mm-hmm. first of all. That's at 36 West Randolph, Adam.
Sure. Well, you know, just if, you know, so this year, you know, we have like a nice collection, seven buildings, as we've said. Mm-hmm. We have a Loop office building, the Delaware building. We have
yeah, a lot of folks will recognize that one.
And it's right down in the Loop on Randolph. It was built right after the fire in 1871, 1872 to 1874, and at that time it was, if you can imagine, the Loop at that time was full of buildings like this. This is really one of the last survivors.
And so why is it endangered?
It's endangered. Well, it's also a designated Chicago landmark, which is surprising because usually Chicago landmarks are well maintained. But while Chicago landmark designation prevents demolition, it doesn't require maintenance. And so this is an example where you have a building that is largely vacant. You have a McDonald's on the first floor, which was there and is now vacant. There's a developer who 2 years ago bought the building and expressed interest in renovating, putting tremendous resources into renovating this building.
Turning it into like residential use, right?
Absolutely. Great adaptive reuse, really pump vibrancy into this important corner in the Loop. And he can't get the permits required because of this lease that's owned by, McDonald's, the corporation on the first floor. My sense is that they don't really know that there's an issue here. They just see this as it's a vacant space. It's not costing much of any money. It's not a priority. This is an opportunity for us to really amplify and elevate this situation and hopefully bring all the stakeholders together and come out with a successful outcome.
Yeah. Let's hop over to 3101 South King Drive, Jonathan, to Olivet Baptist Church. What comes to mind for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, Olivet Baptist is...
So much history.
It's such an incredible building, and the congregation there is, I think, the second oldest African-American congregation in Chicago. And at one point in the beginning of the 20th century, was the largest in Chicago, has now seen a real downsizing, right? Which is happening in congregations across the city and across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So
with the congregation dwindling, and parts of the building closed, it's under threat.
That's right. And this is an example, I think a clear-cut example of where landmarking would open up possible funding for this congregation to use to stabilize the building. Mm-hmm. And that is not a solution necessarily to the larger question of how Chicago preserves its churches and religious spaces. But I think in this case, it is an opportunity to do important upkeep work on this building before it suffers more, and ultimately to hold on to that great legacy of the space and
yeah.
the community that's made use of it.
Here's another interesting one on the list, Adam. You've got a 1903 home that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright.
Right. You'd think Frank Lloyd Wright, that's a name we've all recognized.
Of course.
How is it possible that a Frank Lloyd Wright building or a home in the city of Chicago is on the Chicago 7 Most Endangered? It is, again, and it's a landmark. It's a designated Chicago landmark.
Starting to see a theme here.
Right. So landmarking is an important protection that prevents buildings from being demolished or significantly modified in the first place. It's a very, very important sort of step in the process. That said, it doesn't ensure maintenance. In this case, you had a family that had lived there for decades, an elderly family. The husband did a lot of the maintenance on the building, and when he passed away, his wife just didn't have the ability to continue to maintain the house like it had been.
Mm-hmm.
She passed away in 2019. And now you have a situation where the house has been vacant for many years, and there's a lot of money that's required for maintaining and restoring the building, and it's tied up in sort of with issues about the mortgage and reverse mortgage, and you have an out-of-town owner of this mortgage who thinks the building's worth, well, Frank Lloyd Wright, it must be worth a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, it's sort of stuck. The problem is that, when a house is vacant, You know, we oftentimes go past the house to make sure that the board ups are secure, because if you have, especially in the wintertime, if you've, you can have all sorts of problems in vacant buildings and fire and other problems. So we are very hopeful that this will get resolved soon. But again, the focus and amplification of the problems around the walls or house hopefully will help to bring stakeholders together to come forward with a solution that works.
So this one was super interesting to me, Jonathan. The Central Manufacturing District Clock Tower on Pershing. For those who might not have seen it, what does it look like?
It is a...
tower?
It is a tower. there is a clock. It is made of brick. It is... It was originally part of a extensive campus of manufacturing buildings along Southwestern Boulevard that really represented... obviously, there's some architectural value, but there's also a social history to this, to industrial work in Chicago that these buildings represent collectively, that is fading and is worth remembering and engaging. It's also an extremely, this and the other industrial buildings on the list are extremely robust buildings. They're buildings that like took a lot of material to make. They were built to house heavy machinery, mm-hmm. right? And to bring in a lot of light. If you want to imagine the ideal building type for conversion to residential uses, something that we're really in need of right now in Chicago, this is certainly one of them. You can imagine a condo on the fourth floor or the fifth floor of that tower. I'm looking over at Adam, and I think
I'm ready to move in.
We'd both be ready to move in.
Well, Adam, I teased earlier this bridge, mm-hmm. Clarence Darrow Memorial Bridge.
Yeah,
why is that endangered?
Right. So this is a bridge in Jackson Park. It's across the. It's sort of sandwiched in the lagoon between the back of the Museum of Science and Industry and the Japanese Isle. And you think, and within a stone's throw where the Obama Center is being built. And you think, how is it possible that this bridge from 1880, built by Berman Root, part of the Frederick Law Olmsted's grand design for Jackson Park, has been allowed to deteriorate to the point where they literally, it was shut down to pedestrian access over a decade ago. It's literally crumbling in front of our eyes. And it speaks to a larger issue about maintenance or lack of maintenance in our parks and, mm-hmm. and of sort of public assets. We really believe that now is the time, after many, many years of work on this, now is the time to really have this bridge fully restored and have it restored in a way that's really preservation sensitive. Because, you know, when you ask engineers, bridge engineers to design a bridge, they say, I'm the Dan Ryan, we got perfect designs. And you're like, no. This is in Jackson Park. This is a pedestrian bridge. It has all the original stonework is essentially there. We want to work within the historic framework and bring it back to life in a way that it really becomes the asset that it should be and could be.
And so, of course, we don't have the time to cover everything on the list, but I want to know, in your opinion, what do you think is missing from this list of seven?
Oh, God. You know, we came up with seven, but the full list was over 80 when we started. There are so many buildings that are in various states of need. And this is really a triage list. Which are of these 80 buildings that we're working on and watching and are in the greatest need now? And so these seven represent buildings that we think represent that.
Yeah. Jonathan, what comes to mind for you? I mean, you took a look at the list. Was there anything that you thought stood out more than others? Or?
Oh, gosh. I think that the Delaware building is headlining the list, and I think that it's also one that needs to come up for special attention. This is the oldest building of its type in the Loop. It is on the corner of State and Randolph. It is as close to the center of the world in Chicago as you can get. Mm-hmm. It should be an embarrassment to Chicago to have a landmark in that state of deterioration.
Yeah.
It should be an embarrassment to the McDonald's Corporation also to be obstructing the preservation of that building. McDonald's is a Chicago company. It actually has a long history of architectural patronage in Chicago and the region, some amazing suburban campus architecture out there from McDonald's. And it really should be at the city level, it should be easy enough to get the owner of the building who wants to develop it, a representative of the McDonald's Corporation, you know, our mayor, planning commissioner ought to get those folks in a room and just come to a solution.
Absolutely.
And then, as Adam said earlier, we'll have, as a community, we'll have this amazing asset, and the owner and the leaseholder in this case will be the better for it too.
Yeah.
So that's an example of something where preservation really needs leadership at this moment from the city. Do I feel anything's missing? I would say, to Adam's point about there being 80 other contenders, the one thing that I feel when every year when I see the list of six or seven most endangered buildings is, how do we keep it from getting to this point? Instead of focusing building by building at the moment when they're under threat, which we have to do now because that risk is real, how do we make lasting change culturally, lasting change economically, lasting change in policy, so that our preservation, so the preservation is recognized as a cultural value, and we don't get to this point with this many buildings, particularly for buildings like single family homes, whether they're Frank Lloyd Wright or whether they are
anybody else. To see that on the list, that was the others you might expect. Well, we'll leave it there. The full list is online at WBEZ.org. We've been talking with Jonathan Solomon, who's professor of architecture at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and partner in the firm Preservation Futures, and Adam Natenshon, who is director of operations at Preservation Chicago. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate your time.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. To make sure you never miss an episode, make sure to hit subscribe wherever you listen, or you can find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.